This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Women's rights activists have long been advocating for more participation by women in politics. How do we move beyond the rhetoric and take concrete steps towards this? I speak about this to Lau Shu Shi. She is the exco member of Empower, which is Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor. And I also discuss why she thinks an increase in women's participation in politics will create a shift in power dynamics and decision making and result in positive societal change. Welcome, Shushi, how are you today?
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. You've come all the way from Penang for this.
You're welcome.
So I understand you've worked in several human rights organizations. Could you tell me where?
I work in Swaram, and then I work in Empower, but with two projects. One is Berse, and then the other project is Women Political Participations. Actually, after Swaram is All Women's Action Society. Now I'm working at Penang Women's Development Corporations.
Okay, and what sort of drew you into this line of work?
When I studied in university, I think the environment actually opened my eye to what human rights and what democratization process looks like. Because involving in student movement myself, I realized that if we don't fight, we will not get what we want.
And, you know, you're one of those people who've actually been arrested for, you know, believing in what you believe and for, you know, doing the work that you do. I mean, could you share those experiences with us?
I will see the first time of arrest actually happen in the university itself. Mm-hmm. And it was the most frightening of all, because that is the first time I was exposed to such a intense intimidations by the authority. Just imagine like 10 cameras on you and then 10, 20 security guard around you just because you're holding a few leaflets. But that experience also helped me to understand that unequal is there, you know, if I don't do anything.
There's inequality.
Yeah.
Once you were arrested, I mean, what sort of like repercussions happened from that? I mean, you know, did you face any sort of further kind of action from your university, for example?
I was actually having a case with the authorities. And in the university, you are not allowed to have lawyer. But then the case, they never asked us to go to so-called court. No? Mm-hmm. Because I guess we also put some pressure on the campus, on the school management. They also don't tell you they will drop the case or anything. And it just go along until you graduate from university.
So it's just hanging over you.
Yeah, like just hanging over you. And then it's a bit like there's something that I can always expel you from the campus, but you don't know when, no? But I still graduate. So the second time that I got arrested is when I worked in Swaram. And then when I arrested, I was released the second day after I overnight in lockup. But then they re-arrest me a year after that. When I went back to Penang for a gathering, a protest, then I was having a tea in the coffee shop. And then the arrest officer, back then, a year ago, he recognized me. He arrested me a year ago. So he said, "Ha, you!" And then I got arrested. And then I need to go for court case. That court case dragged for a year. But after that, I was released without any convictions.
Okay. What was the charge for?
Berkelakuan tidak senonoh. So,
sorry, I'm not trying to laugh at, you know.
Yeah, I know.
But to you, but
the charge is really funny. So I'm like, why can't you give me something else? Like, berkelakuan tidak senonoh is usually flashing at people. So, basically, I was charged on this because I questioned the police chief officer in the police stations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I don't know what is the logic for this charge, but that was the charge.
But the bottom line is you were acquitted and there was no charges ever brought up against you, right?
Yeah, after that, I was acquitted.
Okay. I think this is the first time I'm speaking to somebody who's been arrested before.
Under berkelakuan dia tak senonoh. Okay.
And I understand that you also contribute articles to Guangming Daily, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And those kind of reflect your experiences working with communities. Could you tell me about your writing?
I first contribute writing to Kuaming because I guess that is the time that I started to work with Swaram, and journalists started to know me, and then they needed to know to get more comments. So I said, yeah, okay, why not? Then that column has been always reflect my experience working with community. The more I wrote, the more I go into thinking, because when you're writing, you have to be very, you have to observe. I notice a lot of people that participate in human rights programs are men. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, where are all the women? Like those who attended Understanding Police Power are men. Those who turned up to wanted to register or wanted to meet UNHCR refugee, all men. And then I work closely with migrant worker. I don't have chance to see domestic worker who is mostly female.
Mm.
And a lot of detainees, I also work with cases like death in the custody.
Okay.
So a lot of them are actually men. And what happened to their mother, wife? So when I started to think about where is all the women, I started to pick up gender perspective when I'm doing my writing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you write very, very personal. You use very personal experiences to talk about, I suppose, things that are larger issues that are happening within our society. Maybe you could elaborate on, or you could tell us a little bit about maybe one or two of the articles that you've written before.
I wrote one, my experience trying to change sanitary pack in public toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of people are not comfortable talking their own experience, menstruations and all that, because we still have the taboo,
Yeah.
But I guess it's something like I have to shout loudly, I need this because I'm having period. I need somewhere to hang my underwear. It's as simple as that. But people just don't get it. So when I finish writing the article and when I share it openly, most of them are giggle.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But then, a lot of, and I read it openly in UM once, a lot of students come towards me and they said, yeah, we actually have the same experience. So I guess we who experience something unique, and if we don't feel equal, we need to make sure the voice heard.
Yep.
And as a person who not marginalized completely, I want to make sure the voice of the vulnerable or marginalized also heard. That one, I did it through writing as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you find writing like as a form of catharsis? Does it also make you feel, I suppose, better?
It can be quite therapeutic. because sometimes you feel like anger, a lot of anger and disappointment and sadness. But when I write, I needed to engage with my reader.
Mm-hmm.
So what can make your reader like wanted to read more?
Yeah.
I guess we need some kind of humor, in this such a tension living situations every day.
Yeah. And do you get feedback from your readers? Have you ever received feedback saying like, okay, this is good, this is bad? Have you ever faced any sort of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Any sort of online trolling or harassment or any of that sort based on your writing?
There was once I write on, there was a journalist who actually reported quite badly on women's and sport and the way he described the attire of the sportwear of women's,
mm-hmm.
Pretty misleading and I would just say disgusting.
Okay.
So later, what I found out was he actually set up a small group of them who actually really don't like my writing to kind of like against my writing.
Mm-hmm.
I found out much later because there was a columnist that disagree with my points of view.
Okay.
And we wrote to each other openly using our column. I think I replied him one or twice and then I felt like it's kind of like waste my space,
Yeah.
Waste my resources. So I stopped doing it. But in terms of feedback, I've written for 4 years. At one point, it's 2 newspaper. Only after I stop writing, I get feedback. It's like, okay. So I've been writing like 4 years, very longly. So because it's mainstream newspaper, you don't get a like, you don't get whatever emoji to, like Facebook, you don't get that. And because I also pretty low profile, I didn't share my article
on social media
openly, like on social media. So I don't know what people think about that. And then they told me that they enjoy my writing, and it's quite sad that I'm gone. So I'm like, oh, thank you.
Always too late.
Yes, I'm like, but I was so glad that at least someone is reading and someone enjoy reading.
I'm speaking today to Lau Shushi. She's an EXCO member of Empower, which is Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor. And we've kind of been discussing Shushi's experiences working with human rights organizations. But coming up after this quick break, we will talk about her work, which involves getting more women into the political sphere. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Lau Shushi. She's an EXCO member of Empower, which is Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor, and we're discussing the topic of getting more women into politics. So, like I mentioned, one of your areas of work is actually getting more women into the political sphere. You know, what got you into that?
When I actually worked in Bursay office, which back then shared with Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor, Empower. And then Janatani Arumugam was the staff work in Empower back then on women political participations. So I'm pretty close with Jana. No, I actually enjoy be with her, just be with her. She's very knowledgeable, very vibrant, and she willing to share a lot of info about her work. I was like, oh, that is very interesting piece of work. No? So after 6 months working with, I think 6 months, working with Bursay 2.0, I actually asked Maria whether I can work in Empower for the same project.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jana got a scholarship and need to pursue her passion in academic. So I took over Women Political Participation, which we call WPP, a very challenging program, but I really, really appreciate I was given that chance.
And, I mean, did you do a lot of work then? This, I'm guessing, was around the 2013 GE time, am I right?
Yes. So that one is slightly before GE13. We have the opportunity to trans candidate, those women who want to involve in politics to make a change. And I was actually amazed by how dedicated and passionate they are. And also amazed by the barriers that they actually face. So, I'm not so like innocent when I work in Empower, but I still feel like, wow, with these kinds of barriers. And I also know of a candidate actually been changed, I think, 3 constituency before she finally was given a chance to run.
Oh.
So basically, she stayed at one place at 1 to 2 years, like, try to introduce herself to this constituency, did a lot of work, set up the network, and then she got an order, this place will be given to who and who is a man. Then this candidate have to move to another place, no? A given place by party, say party A. No? And after 1 or 2 years, given to another man. So this friends of mine was changed 3 times.
After doing all the groundwork and all the community work.
And but I respect her a lot. I respect her a lot because she still share all the contact with the new candidate. I think I really admire her generosity.
Are more women choosing politics as a career in Malaysia? I mean, just based on the research that you did.
If we look into the figures, we will say more and more women are represented in politics.
Okay.
But in terms of women's involvement in politics, I think it is always quite a large number. It's just these women are always invisible.
Right.
Because they will do the, say, day one booking, they will set up the food, they'll do mobilizing, they'll make sure everything happened, but then who grabbed the mic is a man. And then when we ask them, what do you do? Oh, I do very little thing. I just leafleting. I just social media. I just mobilize. I just come up with a topic. But then they will not say, I'm in charge. Very rarely you will hear women very confidently say, yeah, I'm in charge in this area. Anything you want to talk to, you can speak to me. Usually they will do all the groundwork, but please speak to another man or speak to my YB. So that is the usual situations.
That's the reality of Vietnam. Mm. You know, you mentioned different barriers. Like you mentioned your friend who, you know, basically did all the groundwork and was just told, at, I suppose, the last minute to change constituencies. But what sort of other different barriers are there, are women facing, specifically in Malaysia, being elected to office?
I guess resources is one. If we look at the women's and men economic, no? In Malaysia, men are much better off. In terms of labour participations and all that, men are better off. So women have less resources and women have very different networking. Because men, they have this culture like bro culture. So they will share things. I actually learned a little bit about that when I worked in civil society movement. I can see the bro effect so differently when the same guy dealing with me.
Right.
So with a man, a lot of things seems to be much easier. There is a coaching, also sharing information in, let's say, at Mama Place or when they have tea in the midnight. But I guess for women, although I'm single, if you happen to involve in politics and then you have three kids, how do you want to get a coach who expecting you come out in the midnight for right. a teh tarik.
Right.
It's not like impossible, but the culture of coaching is only one type. I mean, we have to diverse it. That's why we need more women to who is already represented now actually coach the younger women's politician.
It's interesting that you touch on that. You're talking about family commitments and children and things like that. Those are also barriers, I suppose, to, you know, for women to participate fully because they are also expected to look after the family, right?
Yes,
Yeah, not just to pursue. I mean, yes, you can pursue a political career, but make sure your family is looked after well first.
Yes, I know of a women's MP. One of the conditions is she still have to cook three meals in a day. I guess as a working single woman, sometimes I would just choose to eat out.
Yeah.
So I find it like the expectation can be really difficult to achieve. And I also witness this potential women's counselor was guarded by the husband until the entrance of the training room. And then he makes sure there's no other man inside the room before he left. And then we have to ensure him, ta ada lucky. Semua trainer perempuan. To that extent, so to have more women in politics is a challenge, culturally, you know, economically. But I think the biggest challenge is also from the party commitment.
Mm-hmm.
PKR has this 30%. PSM also has 30%. But it's really, really hard to get women out there when they are not given chance in party branch or national level to have a seat. So, yeah, we need political parties to make sure more women active in branches or, no, anywhere in the party. Before, you know, we can actually have enough pool to select women.
And would you agree that if we are to see an influx of women in government, we actually need to see an influx of women running for office? How can we even get this done?
I've been trying to think. in terms of number, we do like increase very, very minimally. And in fact, in the whole Southeast Asia, Malaysia is seen as a more developed country. But in terms of women political participations, we are just better off compared to Burma. Burma and Myanmar.
Imagine that.
Yeah, we are far behind East Timor.
Mm.
East Timor is 38%. Indonesia at one point approaching 30%. Singapore, I cannot remember. But Thailand is 15 to 80%. So everyone is like sort of like better compared to us. And I still get this comment like, you know, women political participation is a new topic. You just need to like let it increase gradually. But in Malaysia, women political participations or representations is not a new topic. We have the first women's MP elected back in 1959. And in 1951, first elections in local councillor happened in Penang. And Nancy Yap, a woman, won the elections. So we are not a stranger to women political participations and representations. But why the number go up so slowly? I also try to find out the answer. You know, Terengganu is the state that do not have women's representations, MP or ADUN.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, yeah, Terengganu is the state. So I was like, how come after independence so many years and then we don't have any women in Terengganu? So I did a little bit reading. This in 2016, Tan Sri Sarizat actually said Terengganu Menteri Besar have assured us as in UMNO Wanita, that in the next GE, GE14, we will have a women's running as MP.
Mm-hmm.
So I dig a little bit more. And then I found out, actually, back in 1956, Khatijah Siddiq is the MP in Dugun, Terengganu.
Oh.
So, yeah, but...
What's the disconnect, right? All these...
Yeah, yeah, because later. Sometimes I felt that it's like we don't compile information enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think that Terengganu do not have women. But what happened after Khatijah Siddiq? Like, Khatijah Siddiq, she wanted to be candidate back in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't given a chance. So she actually kind of like, we will not move, we will not campaign if there's no women's candidate. And then she fired by UMNO. Oh. She was the Ketua Kaum Ibu UMNO. And in 1956, she elected under the ticket of PAS. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
So, I was wondering, 60 years, what happened to Terengganu? You have one of the most progressive women, one of the most vocal women, and then that's it. So, I was like reading to prepare for this interview, and I, oh my God, even, I'm not saying I know everything, but back in when I worked for Empower, I read quite a lot to make sure I'm able to catch up with the latest discussions.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's always something that I found I actually don't know about women's political participations and representations. I guess we spend so little resource trying to understand this part. And women's in politics is also a bit like more strategically moved to look better.
Yeah.
So I guess we need to, I guess I need to work harder.
But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, the women who have made it into politics, they've tended to be, you know, assigned either to ministries seen as suitable to their roles, you know, such as the Ministry of Welfare or the Ministry of Women and Family Development, or to junior ministries such as Culture, Youth and Sports in the past. You know, I think the only, as far as I remember, that is the only woman given a senior ministerial post was Rafida Aziz, who was appointed Minister of International Trade and Industry in 87, as far as I can remember.
Sometimes when I talk to women's MP or ADUN, when they're assigned to certain tasks that related to welfare, youth, women's, I do experience some women, some MP or ADUN, really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really don't like. And I don't blame them. It's not because you're born as women, then you automatically understand gender. It doesn't work that way. It's not that they're against the gender equality. It's because they wanted to have other portfolio so much. But then they are instructed to actually hold the positions or hold the post as welfare, women's, youth. And they're actually frustrated because they felt, I wanted to do other things. And gender stuff is not something that I can contribute so much. So,
because they could be a scientist and maybe want to work in natural resource and environment, for example.
Yes, exactly. So I felt just because you're a woman and then you're expected to play certain role, which sometimes I felt is all women, in fact, everyone should be given equal chance and opportunity to achieve what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Based on their qualifications and not their gender.
Yes. But I must say, in terms of experience, sometimes it's pretty hard for men to understand. No? I heard YB Teo Nianqing mention once, when she started as MP, she don't see gender issue as such a major topic. But she, when you find out that actually you have to do breastfeeding in the toilet, and then there's no one else talking about this topic, you have to focus in this topic. And well, biologically, you don't share the experience. There would be male representative who is more gender sensitive, but they cannot represent women. They cannot represent women. I really hope that they can talk more on toxic masculinity rather than I speak for women.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, toxic masculinity, that's something that we even see in our parliament, you know, with the kind of comments made by MPs and our own ministers about women and our bodily functions and, you know, how do you even,
I was doing this parliament monitoring when I work in Empower. And then me and a few volunteers have to go through all the Hansard. So a lot of sexism or comments on women, or how they actually look at women, are actually not reported. One of it actually, which scared me a lot, is I cannot recall who is the MP, said we need to get women into the market, the labour market. Not because women's right, and then not because women have the right to work, we have to ensure women's and economic status are getting better. No, it's not because of that. It's because of you want to bring in migrant worker, it's actually more expensive, and the money is actually go out from the country. So you see, these are the info. These are the things that MP says in parliament. But unless you actually sit through all the Hansard or sit through all the sessions, you might not get it. Because sorry to say, most of the reporter might not think this is important. And because of the restrictions and the news that go into the newspaper, everything have to be fast, the main topic. So you open up 6-7 Chinese newspaper will be the same issue. Mm-hmm. And then you won't get details like this unless you go and read the Hansard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a reality that we are facing because of we don't have freedom of information and media.
And it's interesting what you mentioned also about the MP, because gender was not part of her agenda, but it suddenly had to be because nobody else was talking about it, right?
Yes.
And I think, and that's also a misconception, that getting women into politics means that they will take on gender as their agenda. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
And conversely, just because men are there, it does not mean that they cannot take on gender as their agenda.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. I see some of the men MP, I must... I actually quite admire at the level of understanding and commitment that they show. But I hope that we can start to discuss this toxic masculinity rather than, oh, sympathetic, that poor women, that kind of tone.
I mean, I guess then it's important, you know, just to get men involved as well. You know, it's not a women's issue.
Yes,
per se.
It's a gender issue. Is gender, which affected you, your family, your children.
And I mean, now just looking at women voters, you know, based on your research from G2013, did Malaysian women vote a lot in the last elections? Because we're about 50% of the population of Malaysia.
Yes.
Are we a strong voting bloc?
Since the GE13, I think, okay, like Sarawakian, they are the kingmaker, no? Mm-hmm. That is what been said. But women's vote can change. Because sometimes in one family, you will have different parties who actually vote for... You have two like different preference.
Sure.
And I think, because in traditionally, always man is the...
Decision maker?
Decision maker, even in terms of vote. I interviewed women after GE 12. And a lot of them is just said, you ask my husband, you ask my husband, you ask my husband.
Right.
I'm asking their opinion as a voter.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have opinion per se. And then this is in a much developed state like Penang. No? So you get this kind of response. Therefore, youth and women and the new registered voter can make a lot of change if they started to expose to politics and then they started to make up their mind who they want to vote. If they make decisions, they want a better future.
Because also they then can also start shaping the agendas of the different politicians, right?
Yeah. That's the reason why for few elections, women's organizations, they come up with women's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, oh, we are so special, but because we are forgotten most of the time, we must have an agenda saying, hey, we are here. This is our agenda.
Yeah, improve our public toilets.
Yes, as simple as that.
Yeah, right. Give us space to breastfeed our children.
Yes.
Give us, you know, equal pay, those
sorts
of...
I want to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I need to work full-time, not only part-time and then... use my own electric, use my own water to do part-time work, and then I don't get insurance, I don't get social, I don't get EPF. Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah. So not only is it important to get women into politics, it's also very important to get women to vote and to start shaping the agenda, essentially.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And are you continuing in this line of research? Are you still in this line of research?
In Empower, we are more concentrated on elected positions. So that time we worked closely with those who wanted to participate in campaign,
mm-hmm.
either as campaign manager, you want to be candidate, you want to be foot soldier, you wanted to know how to identify which one is your hot seat, which one is your core seat, and what kind of activity that you want to run. And now I'm working more on appointed seat, like local councillor, JKKK. So these are based on appointment. So basically, you need to understand how political party works.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 years working on women's and appointed representative, I have to be honest, it's very confusing. Because you don't have a very clear structure. You always have a obsessional kind of situations, like you have condition A and B, and then you suddenly have C. So it's pretty challenging to work either on elected representations or appointed representations. It's equally challenged, but I enjoy the process.
And are you also working to kind of get more women registered as voters and, you know, to exercise their rights as a...
In general, the call is women, please register. And then we provide training, gender awareness, gender sensitivity, gender sensitizations, and then so to help them to frame up their opinion and help them to voice up. When I come for meeting, can we have childcare? That is one of the things that we're trying to talk to JKKK women's.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite happy, one of the ustas actually said openly during the training, said, yeah, I can bring this to my women and then let us discuss how can we do that.
Mm-hmm.
So when women can come into public space for meeting, that is a great improvement for me. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because most of the time, a few programs that I went to, men are in the meeting room, women are sitting in the kitchen, and then you know that they are listening, but because sometimes to get them, it's just to prepare food, no? And then, yeah, you all can go back, no? Now the man having meeting.
Yeah.
And I saw a few times during election, the drama, a guy was actually holding a mobile, which is connected to the wife, and hold it like that. So the wife can actually listen live drama. when she's in the house taking care of babies. And then I must say, this husband pretty cute because he called the wife and make sure that the wife can hear.
Okay.
So women wanted to know, it's just this public space have to be more friendly to women who actually have children.
And not just children, I think, you know, elderly parents, for example. You know, I mean, that's all the... Yeah.
Women usually be the caretaker.
Yeah.
So if you happen to have, like, elderly or this different ability, you know, children physically or mentally, it's all women's responsible. So if you get women into decision-maker positions, these experiences are really, really valuable. Because they know top to tell, like, what happened daily and how it affected women and their family and their surrounding.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Shushi. Hopefully, you know, people listening today who haven't registered, for example, they will make sure
Please do.
You know, and make sure that they push their local MPs or, you know, whoever to push the gender agenda as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. I've been speaking to Lau Shushi. She's an EXCO member of Empower, which is Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor. And we've been discussing how we can get more women into politics. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.